when you do it that backwards, and we get this a lot. A lot of people reach out like, we want to put this tool in to solve our problems. Like, the tool is not going to solve your problems. I think you very, very clarifying and communicating across your team so everybody agrees what their problem is probably a better way to start solving the problem, is to clarify what the problem is. You know, I always do the exercise of the discovery calls. Talk to the key stakeholders. What are your biggest problems? Can we rank them? And then can we go meet as a team? And let's not worry about who said what, but let's prioritize this list of problems we're able to curate from everybody. And then prioritize it just so we all agree what's number one problem, number two, number three. And then let's start looking at solutions based on how well it's going to solve the problem.
Welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Just sit back, relax, and learn from the leaders of today. It's a journey. Each one is different, unique, inspiring. Let's get started.
20 Minute Leaders is a proud supporter of Make-A-Wish Israel and Tech to Peace, and is in proud collaboration with Secret Chord Ventures, J Ventures, Riverside FM, Fusion VC, Birthright Excel, J Impact, Leap, Google for Startups, and Hippo,
and in media partnership with CTech.
This episode is all about M&As. Meet Kisan Patel, the founder and CEO of M&A Science, with a passion to drive the M&A industry forward. He was an M&A advisor for 10 years in which he sold larger companies such as commercial banks and hotel chains. And in 2012, he noticed teams lacked efficient technology to manage deals and created Dealroom, an M&A lifecycle management platform. In 2016, he started the M&A Science podcast, devoting his time to creating a platform where all the best practitioners could share their best practices and lessons learned from real-life deals. Kisan then created the M&A Science Academy in 2020 to offer step-by-step training to those looking to master M&A, featuring courses created by top-level practitioners. Through developing technology, educational content, and industry training, Kisan aims to bring better practices to an industry with growing market pressures, transaction values, and competition. Kisan Patel, welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking, Michael.
I'm excited to have you here with it, looking at deals, right? I mean, we're looking at M&As, and it's a very complicated market that we're in. It's constantly changing. And from an entrepreneur's perspective, it can be a little bit weird to think through some of these strategies. That on one hand, we're building products, right? And we're being measured on our technology, our product, on our ability to have meaningful impact on consumer behavior. But then there is this whole other part of our work, which is at the end, M&A and closing deals, which are not always one and the same with developing the product. And so I'm looking forward to hearing your insights on this. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
How'd you get started with deals, M&A strategy? How did that become your world?
That's a good question. I think for a little kid, I was always interested in big things, big numbers. My dad would complain about it. He's like, why is this kid always talking about millions and billions? And, I got into real estate early, in residential real estate, and I wasn't good at it. And somehow I found my way into this boutique M&A advisory practice that was just starting up. So I was like hire number three. And I got my feet grounded right there because you had to do everything. Like, it was so early in building this, I was heavily involved in the business development part of it, which was the fun part, to go out, to go interact with clients, go hunt deals. And then when I found it, we didn't have a team of analysts. So then you had to do all the back end work once you got a deal in progress. So I got to learn all those things. I did that for a year with this firm. Wasn't completely bought in on their strategy and long-term vision. So I left to start my own practice and built that up for close to a decade. Did mostly hotel, hospitality transactions, and small financial institutions.
Wow. And so you come into this industry and you realize that there's ways to innovate in it, right? And to look at the whole flow and the life cycle of an M&A. What sort of led to your conviction that something here can be changed or improved upon, that you can dedicate your career to this right now?
It starts with the typical founder experience in the industry, which gets you familiar with a lot of the pain points, challenges. But as I kept expanding the view and looking at other types of deals, bigger transactions, I just identified a massive amount of inefficiencies, which I correlated with a massive amount of opportunity to create value. And we wanted to start by bringing in a project management tool into the space because I took a lot of inspiration from the software industry and how these engineers were using these cool project management tools to drive their efficiency, and thought, why not for M&A? Why don't we bring that in? And we started with just that, focusing on the due diligence problem, bringing in a project management tool so that there's a much more efficient workflow instead of what companies were doing in Excel, which was highly inefficient. And then it just, I think the thing, the big lesson learned the hard way was creating a good feedback loop with your cohorts of prospective customers you're looking to serve, and being able to get feedback very, very early, in early as identifying the problem you're trying to solve, and make sure that you understand that problem, that the problem's worth solving. And once we started building that feedback loop and continued it as a cycle, as we started prototyping solutions and continued getting feedback, we found it much more effective to create solutions for the market, which allowed us to keep that same cycle and repeat it as we identify other problems. So we went from diligence management to, after the deal's done, you got to integrate this company. And yeah, for us, once we solved that problem, it even built a better value proposition by solving the integration problem, because now we found that there's underpinning problem of the continuity between diligence integration. A lot of the knowledge doesn't get handed off, so we're able to solve for that. And then you just continue down the line talking to practitioners. We found that the industry as a whole was lacking best practices and real evidence in the techniques that they're applying to M&A. And that's what led us to starting a podcast to leverage that as a platform to enable practitioners to be able to share the lessons learned. So through a series of these interviews, we've been able to publish books and frameworks. And now we kind of enter working with the client hand in hand. What are the best practices we can introduce? What are the tools that we can introduce to help standardize those practices and really look at their life cycle and drive that efficiency?
So if you're looking at the way deals are made, and if we're looking at some, you know, common pitfalls that may not be so trivial to somebody who didn't experience them firsthand, what are some of those misalignments? You mentioned one, which was this handing off of the information or knowledge between the diligence and the integration post acquisition. But are there other, you know, non-trivial pitfalls that M&As generally tend to converge to that you're helping avoid through Deal Room?
The Deal Room product, I would say there's a lot around information management, but the bigger theme is the people, having a people-focused M&A approach. When we look at traditional M&A, we think of the old RJ Nabisco, these old school transactions that were just heavily financially driven. And that's all it was just all about the financial model to build a case to do the deal. But companies now realize it's all about how well teams are aligned to be able to execute on that plan to be able to deliver the value. So now we're seeing a greater emphasis and changes around how do you create that alignment and engagement throughout the process so that these teams understand clearly where the goals are, they're motivated, and they're out executing to be able to deliver those results. With that, so you got a couple things that happen. One is, what's the end state look like, right? There's this, we always have a vision of what we want to achieve and how we're going to create value. And that's how we build our synergy models to come up with that case for doing the deal. But then when we look at what the actual end state looks like of that business and how it serves the customers, because we are going from two different businesses that exist to create value for their customers with their own unique ways of doing it. And how's that going to come together in one? So we sort of have a consolidated customer journey. I'm bringing that vision all the way to the very front end of the process and getting executives aligned around it so they can get a sense of, what's this go-to-market going to look like? What are those things that we're going to need to change to achieve that go-to-market? And especially the executive for the company you're acquiring. And a lot of times they get fixated on the check and how big of a check they're going to get and how long it's going to take to close. But what's your role and responsibility after we close? How are you going to help us make sure we achieve our goals and get the value on this business? Sure. I'd say that's a big thing, the end state up front. And then the other is around the culture side, right? Because we hear about these deals blow up because cultures didn't mix and match. There's always the Daimler Chrysler deal. That's a prime example. You know, hey, we're going to give you autonomy. No, we're not going to give you autonomy. Not good. You know, if you got the startup stuff, right? You got a traditional company, very top-down management, startup, very bottoms-up management. They don't just integrate fully together nicely. So how do we understand the cultures? And starts off by just values, right? Every company's got values somewhere. When you have a conversation around it and actually expand what those values mean, you get an understanding of culture, leadership approaches. Those things help you. It helps you understand maybe there's some big red flags and these we shouldn't come together as an organization. Or maybe we better understand how we're going to come together as an organization. Maybe because there's some differences, we need to do very minimal integration versus there's a lot of complementary styles and culture then we could integrate more fully. So those are like some of these key considerations when buying a company that you would really, we were starting to see change, right? Definitely more about the people, getting the alignment up front. And then also just throughout that process, how do you keep a level of transparency to keep people in the know? A lot of times you hear that cliche thing where the vision gets lost, the why are we doing this deal? And people are, it turns into checkboxing activity and things get messed up. You know, if you can keep the goals there and create that autonomy, transparency, then teams can problem solve as they come across some of these things when they go through that life cycle.
Sure. So communication, people first, integration, expectations, it sounds like this is a central theme to these M&A processes, which non-trivially, they don't necessarily align with, you know, is this the right business fit? Is this the right product fit? So we're assuming that given those stand in place, now we're approaching a new set of challenges, which it seems like weren't in too much consideration until now. And so with that understanding, sort of what do you do, right? I mean, so how do you build a product that actually helps, you know, make that better and to enable that communication?
Yeah, for us, the product's evolved because we started our first deal room back in 2012 and started as purely diligence management, selling to investment banks on the sell side. We realized the hard way it wasn't our early adopters. They're not the ones super motivated to innovate their style and approach to be more efficient. So we shifted to corporate where we got our traction. Then we added the capabilities for integration management, then pipeline management, evolved the product into a full M&A lifecycle management platform. Mm-hmm. And that's what we provide today to corporations as our flagship solution, is a portal that allows you to run a deal end-to-end, create that continuity, enable a collaboration, and have that nature or management of multi-party built into it. So you want to enable a collaboration with your internal teams, enable the collaboration with your external teams and the counterparty all in one environment. The industry's had these project management tools. They've had these virtual data rooms. And what we did was brought the two together very nicely into a single product that actually works well. And that's sort of our core tech stack that we provide. Now, it's flexible. It adjusts based on clients' needs and their ecosystem, the compliance requirements, and so forth. Our education side, we published a series of books and frameworks around the best practices, because even just telling you about, hey, getting aligned around the front end stuff, the vision and things like that, it starts prompting you to think about how you're going to integrate the companies really early. And when you do that, you want to keep making that an iterative process. So as you go through diligence, you continuously iterate on your integration plan. A lot of companies don't do this. They wait till but far beyond because they think they want to have this full certainty about the deal closing. And then they start bringing people in to plan integration, which it becomes tough to do that. You want to do it as a so that's when we start thinking about best practices. You identify those approaches where they go hand to hand. It's not that you throw a technology in there, it's going to solve all your problems. I think other thing we notice too is if organizations start evaluating their approach, they start getting change oriented. When they're willing to open up their mind and look at, hey, here's some ideas of things we could do different, better. Now let's try that out and see if it works, and then decide what we want to keep, what we want to try something different and modify and go from there. When companies are doing that, they little by little, they start becoming change oriented. Then it becomes easier and it makes more sense to throw the technology in because people, their teams will understand why. We're implementing this tech to standardize this, to you solve this problem. When you do it that backwards, and we get this a lot, a lot of people reach out like, we want to put this tool in to solve our problems. Like, the tool's not going to solve your problems. I think you very, very clarifying and communicating across your team so everybody agrees what their problem is probably a better way to start solving the problem, is to clarify what the problem is. You know, I always do the exercise of the discovery calls, talk to the key stakeholders. What are your biggest problems? Can we rank them? And then can we go meet as a team? And let's not worry about who said what, but let's prioritize this list of problems we're able to curate from everybody. And then prioritize it just so we all agree what's number one problem, number two, number three. And then let's start looking at solutions based on how well it's going to solve the problem and be open about it, right? Because maybe it's not technology. Maybe it's just changing our practice. We have some fall offs on cross-functional dependencies. We could create some stand-up meetings that with those cross-functional teams to solve that, right? It could be just a practice thing. Or you might come across something that maybe is more of a technology thing, that information handoff between diligence integration. Well, if we're Andrew, using the same product between the two, we'd have better information handoff.
Now, how much is this a human in the loop versus automatic, you know, product? What is sort of the, well, what is, how do you see the balance between these two worlds?
It depends on the problem to solve. I think a lot of times it's practice first. I would look at the practice first, and then the tool tends to be what's there to help you standardize the practice.
Okay. And so in that way, how much focus are you putting on, you know, as a technology versus, you know, people?
It depends where they're coming from. I think that's a big thing for us to understand, because we have a lot, our business, we have a phenomenal marketing team, so they create a lot of inbound interest. So we're very fortunate, but then those are the ones that are all over the place. You know, when you go outbound to a company, you're running the discovery process. They may be aware about some of those challenges, but you're really helping them to think it through and understand what's the impact of those challenges and starting to build a formal business case on how our solution would be able to help solve it. And that's early on when we think about even the marketing, they're introducing best practices early. A lot of our content, our podcast, we're interviewing practitioners trying to learn from their, what are their lessons learned? Can we write up an ebook about some of the best practices we learned from interviewing three M&A lawyers? And then we like to share that information. So a lot of times the inbound, they've already read some of our books. They've listened to a number of our podcasts. They've adopted some of these best practices. They've developed a level of trust. And then they start reaching out with interest in the product solutions. And then it gets a lot easier to have that conversation very focused on the product. Whereas, excuse me, if you're reaching out cold, you got to start it over from the beginning where you want to introduce those best practices where you see fit.
Are we discovering new innovative ways to do these deals, or the life cycle of these deals? Or do you feel like we're sort of converging on the best practices and this is how, you know, society works, this is how business works? Or, I mean, how much does this tend to evolve and change over time?
I think there is a big change in that the drivers of doing M&A are shifting. The old school way was you're doing things for the financial mechanisms, you're arbitraging valuations by doing roll-ups. You're really focused on market share as your means for acquisition. If we look at any of the tech companies, majority of their acquisitions are on capabilities. CrowdStrike bought Humio, and it was a play because it made no sense in valuation and why they paid $500 million for that company. But if you looked at how unique their technology was and how much it would enhance the capability of CrowdStrike, it was well worth spending the $500 million. So that's, we're seeing more of that, where when you're buying companies because of the capability, and it's very different, right? Because when you buy a company for market share, you can be pretty, take more of a static approach to how you integrate the company. It's sort of, hey, we're going to, especially like the assets, right? You're buying factories, things like that. You buy it, here's a plan, we'll go integrate, move on. But when it's something like capabilities, it's really different. You're trying to take what this little startup has done and the way they do things and disrupt your own business, right? You're trying to transform your own company. So if you look at what can we do with a company after we buy it, we can, number one, do nothing. And companies do that. They'll buy the company. They don't do anything. They kind of cheer the management team on and let them do their thing. We could do a partial integration. We sort of integrate some key functions, our accounting, HR, backend stuff, call it a day. We could do a full integration where we fully integrate the company right into ours. Then we have this transformative integration where we're trying to make more changes in our organization to be able to get the value and transform our business. That's unique. That's where a lot of the stuff where we've done the research around Agile, did case studies with Google and Atlassian, published a book called Agile M&A. It's geared towards that. It's how do we think through about transformative deals where you're buying a business to disrupt your own business and completely morph and change it? That's a big shift in the business. That requires a totally different way of thinking about it because you have to be dynamic. You have to, as you go through, it's not so much, oh yeah, yeah, you guys have to change to Salesforce. You got to stop using Slack and go use, you know, our team. It's like, no, we need to learn from you. We need to say, hey, you know, maybe this new CRM that we've never heard of is better than what we're using.
Sure.
Right. It's really difficult to get a team that's responsible to integrate this company to think of it the other way around of like, how do I change our processes and learn from this company and be able to change so we can adopt our ways to become better. That's what's the big, big difference right now. And I would say as a whole, why this industry is changing significantly.
Fascinating. I think that one thing that that perhaps is leaving me here, I think it's sort of this understanding about the complicated nature of these deals and how dynamic they are and how attentive you have to be to the decision makers and give respect to each part of the process. It sounds like a lot of the mishaps that we were talking about before, they were emerging from miscommunication, misalignments, lack of integration, lack of consolidation or understanding that it's a people first mentality. And that's exactly what you're here to do. And I really want to thank you for coming in and sharing those, you know, those insights with me. And it sounds like you have quite a bit of experience in the field and quite a bit of journey behind you already that you've seen a lot and you've done a lot. So it says a lot.
This is just
thank you very much for joining.
We got a long ways to go, Michael. I got to disrupt and change this whole industry. We got a long ways to go.
100%. Kaysan, thank you very, very much and continue making great deals.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure.
Thank you.